Episode 3 of Mace Pants Podcast. Patrick Vint, a.k.a. Hawkeye State, joining you, along with Dave from Mason Brew. Dave, how you doing tonight?
Dave, not... I was in shock that you used your real name there.
I switched over.
Oh, really?
Yeah, about a week ago.
Oh, shit. I honestly didn't know that. I was completely shocked.
Way to pay attention, Dave. Jesus.
Dude, I haven't had a chance to do anything but... All right, let's start that one more time.
All right.
And it's Dave Nightingale.
Do you use your real name now?
You know, I use it from time to time. I used it on 11 Brews last year. I mean, it's really easy to find out that I do it. I just don't have it directly on the site.
Gotcha. All right. Dave Nightingale it is.
Mm-hmm. You want to start us off again?
Sure, I can.
Yeah.
Episode 3 of Maze Pants Podcast, the joint collaboration of Blackheart Gold Pants and Maze and Brew. Patrick Vint, a.k.a. Hawkeye State, coming at you from lovely Des Moines, Iowa, and joined by Dave Nightingale, a.k.a. Mason Brew Dave, of lovely Chicago, Illinois. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing good, my man. Just, I'm running out of fingernails. It's finally time for Big Ten football, and it's really not going to get here soon enough. So I guess I'm just going to try and force myself to get through the next 2 days without throwing anything out a window and following it out.
I know. It's been rough. It's been a tough, long, arduous offseason. Lots of really, really horrible downtime. But it's about to kick off. It's about to start all up again. 3 Big Ten games on Thursday night. And a personal favorite of mine, Iowa State, opening up at home against lovely Northern Illinois. I will be in attendance at Jack Trice Stadium. sitting in the Northern Illinois section, as always.
Wearing your Iowa gear and
actually I have a custom made T-shirt for it. David Sims stole my credit card and all I got was this stupid shirt.
Ah, that's beautiful.
I plan on getting punched in the face.
You're gonna have to reach up to do that. I don't know anybody at Iowa State that's tall that's not on the basketball team.
It's Tuesday night, which means we're about 48 hours away from this thing finally starting up. And as Dave said, not a moment too soon. Before we get to the slate of games for this week, quick rundown of some of the off-season issues that are still that still haven't resolved themselves. Dave, any insight right now into the situation at Michigan as far as who's going to start week one?
You know, my money right now at this point is still on Denard Robinson. I know that there is still some cachet and what Tate did last year, but just based on what I've seen on the limited film that I had, the fact that Robinson was actually held back the same way that stars like Mike Martin were during the last scrimmage leads me to believe that they wanted to see who was going to be number two between Tate and Devin Gardner, the incoming outstanding freshman. So my guess at this point is Denard Robinson is your starter, and unless he starts either A, turning the ball over, or B, turning the ball over, I think he's the clear starter. But, you know, that leads us to the next big question, which is what the hell is going on with Iowa's running back situation?
Oh, it's another day as the world turns here. They've basically decided that even if Brandon Wager was to come back, he probably wouldn't be playing particularly much this year. So I think everyone seems to be chalking it up that this is going to be at best a redshirt year, if not a full-on transfer. You know, we're hoping that he decides to stay in, and he apparently has enrolled in class and is going to classes, so he's still on campus. I think it's whatever the issue is, it doesn't appear to be a transfer thing unless necessity arises. That leaves Iowa with prohibitive favorite Jewel Hampton, who is suspended for week one after a bar fight, and that means that we'll turn once again to Adam Robinson, who was a Big Ten newcomer of the year last year as a redshirt freshman, but never...
He's not Jewel Hampton.
He's not Jewel Hampton, and he never really carried the load 100% last year, except for a couple of games where Wager was injured. With that said, Iowa starts at Eastern Illinois, and as good as the Panthers, or whatever they're called. We're calling them Panthers. as good as the Panthers might be,
the large cats.
You might not need to be three deep at running back. This could be plenty of the one game this year where we see plenty of Pocky O'Meara.
Pocky. Makes me so happy to hear that. Unfortunately, there was another bad chunk of news that came out of Iowa over the week. I believe your backup center was injured in a motorcycle accident. Have you heard anything else about that?
Yeah, and in fact, a press conference today, Kirk Ferentz more or less said, we're incredibly lucky, but it looks like it's just bumps and bruises. He probably won't play this week. It's Josh Keppel is his name, and Keppel had been listed as the co-first ring center along with Ferentz's son. Everyone kind of presumed that Keppel, who was a senior, would probably be starting at least to begin with, but that Ferentz would eventually pass him up. And this might just be Ferentz passing him up earlier. Kind of a really weird accident. Somebody just turned in front of him and hit him while he was on his motorcycle in downtown Iowa City. But, fortunately for him, fortunately for us, fortunately for everybody, it looks like there aren't any particularly serious injuries there.
Well, since he's actually okay, I can make the joke. Was it a tractor that pulled out in front of him? I'm just curious.
The joke we made was a truck pulled out and hit Josh Keppel. That truck's name was Christian Ballard. But,
of course, a defensive tackle taking on the center. See, that's how it works, folks. Synergy.
Synergy. It's exactly what it is. And although the tractor jokes are nice. It's a nice touch.
That's what I got here. Well, I mean, we've got actually a pretty good schedule of games coming up, and there are some ones that, if you're a Big Ten fan, you're kind of nervous about, because Middle Tennessee State could actually beat Minnesota and to start the season off. And, I know as an Iowa fan, you find this immensely amusing, but as a Big Ten fan, does that kind of worry you a little bit?
My hatred for Minnesota stretches far more than my respect in the conference. I would love nothing more than to watch them just collapse in flames in this game. But Middle Tennessee State, and by the way, I've put way too much thought into this game because our game isn't that interesting this week. But Middle Tennessee State, while the favorite in the Sun Belt this year, or one of the favorites, is not going to be with their starting quarterback, who was responsible for about 70% of their offensive output last year.
Yeah, I still find it funny that somebody – they're actually boosters at directional state universities. I mean, who in their right mind is saying, hey, I've got money for you to come here and play. It's great for you. Here, have this Ford Taurus.
Hey, there's
– it's not the new one. It's a 1989 Ford Taurus, but it's all yours. I mean –
Hey, they're the Blue Raiders. They'll raid, they'll plunder, they'll pillage, they'll do anything.
Wouldn't that make them Vikings?
Vikings, Raiders, it's all about the same thing. It's all a question of colors, really. Well, speaking of arch rivals, the beloved Michigan State Spartans open conference play Saturday against Western Michigan, who can occasionally be a little tricky for a Big Ten team. Dave, put any thought into this game, or what do you think?
To be perfectly honest, I really haven't. But the fact that Western Michigan is without a chunk of their line and without their starting quarterback from last year, who was reputed to be one of the better quarterbacks in the MAC, I don't see any way that Western Michigan wins that game. But then again, it is Michigan State, who the previous year had lost to Central Michigan somehow. I to this day, I still don't know how that happened, but you never want to put it past Michigan State to do something that just brings shame upon everyone there. But I just can't see them. I can't see them gacking this up. I think D'Antonio is a good enough coach that this shouldn't happen again. But hopefully it becomes a pattern. And like you said, my deep, unending hate for Michigan State will prejudice my conference loyalty on this one. But I don't see Western Michigan pulling this one out. But we do have four games that should be fairly close in the conference. You're the big Northwestern supporter on this one, so, and I know it's just Northwestern, but Northwestern is at Vanderbilt. What do you make of this? Is Vanderbilt actually going to be good enough to beat Northwestern? Northwestern should be pretty good this year.
I'll be completely honest with you. I know remarkably little about Vanderbilt since Bobby Johnson stepped down.
Steve Martin left, I mean, I completely lost interest.
I don't know what to think of this game, because Northwestern should be more than capable of handling Vandy in their current state. And yet, this is a game that Northwestern perennially loses. They always drop one in non-conference play against kind of a low-level BCS team or an upper mid-major, a game that they really probably should win. This is a classic for them. They're at Vandy. It's a night game, and it's early in the season where I could see Northwestern slipping up here. For the sake of the conference, I would prefer they didn't, because if we can't even beat Vanderbilt, the SEC chants are going to kill us all. but it's going to be a tricky one. They got to be wary of that game.
Yeah, I think they do. I think they got a pretty good chance. I think Dan Persis is going to be a lot better than people think. But like you said, it is a night game in Nashville, Tennessee, and you know Dollywood's right around the corner. So you know some of these guys could be out late. They could be having a smoothie. Who knows?
Exactly. One of the more competitive games of the weekend involves your own Michigan Wolverines taking on UConn. So let's get the preview. How are you feeling about this one?
You know, honestly, if I said I was anything other than nervous or, you know, downright pessimistic, just slap me. I think this is going to be a really close game. I think ultimately Michigan wins this one. I've looked at the defenses. I've looked at the offenses. I've whittled this down to every conceivable, you know, point of view. This is going to be a 40-45 kind of game. I mean, it's going to be a lot of points. Michigan's secondary has no chance in hell of stopping what I consider to be a pretty good offense. I think Zach Frazier is a very good quarterback. He's got a monster offensive line that's only replacing one starter in front of him. Got a very good running back behind him. And, you know, three not stellar but capable receivers. So unless Michigan's defensive line and linebackers get a lot of pressure on Frazier, Michigan's going to be in a lot of trouble defensively. On the other hand, I don't see UConn's defense stopping Michigan's offense. So someone's going to get a stop. Someone is going to, you know, get that extra touchdown. My gut says that, you know, Rich Rodriguez has had Randy Edsall's number every time they played. Most of those games have been blowouts. And Rich Rodriguez is doing that with a lot less talent than he's doing this year with Michigan. So I think Michigan wins it. I think it's closer than anyone wants it to be in Maize and Blue. But, you know, hopefully we start the 2010 season out well this year. But, you know, it could just as easily go the other way.
Yeah, that's a toss-up. It's going to be a tough one. UConn, I think you're right on the offense especially. They've got some real talent. Question is, can Edsall really turn it into something? They've always had, you know, competent halfbacks, pretty decent quarterbacks in certain spots, but they've never really turned the corner. It could be an interesting game. At the big house, I'd give the benefit to Michigan, but, you know, it's probably a coin flip.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, that also kind of leads us into the other really big game on the schedule, which is Purdue versus Notre Dame. Purdue has been predicted by a lot of people to be a dark horse. I mean, ourselves included, to be a pretty good team. And then they've got Notre Dame, which is rebuilding their offensive line. They're rebuilding their quarterback, but they still have Robert Hughes at running back. They've got Michael Floyd out on the wings, and they should have a lot of talent on defense. Do you think Purdue can pull this off in South Bend?
Can they? Yeah, possibly. I don't think they will, though. I'm a little nervous about Notre Dame this year just because I feel it's a lot like Brian Kelly going there and taking over the talent that Charlie Weiss was able to kind of coalesce. Feels to me a lot like Houston Nutt's first season at Ole Miss, where he was playing with all of Ed Orgeron's guys, who had never really had a guy coach him properly for the college level.
Lemsday, football. Lemsday.
Lemsday was the best. Loved it. I get the feeling that he might really have something with this first couple of years of this team, just because, you know, say what you will about Charlie, and you could say plenty, he was always right at the top of the recruiting rankings. And you're giving a pretty big gun to Brian Kelly, who'd been firing water pistols and being successful for the last couple of years.
The thing that I don't trust about Notre Dame is their offensive line. I think that defense is actually really, really good, but replacing their left. I mean, they're replacing three-fourths of their line, four-fifths of their line, and that was the reason that Jimmy Clausen really left. I think if he'd had a chance to stay in a pro system one more year with a full-size offensive line and actually go to a decent bowl game, I think there's a chance that he might have stayed. But he saw the writing on the wall the same way Ryan Mallett saw the writing on the wall with Michigan and got the hell out as quickly as possible. You don't want to be a draft level prospect, first or second round prospect with a rebuilding line in your senior year or in your money. So I think Notre Dame's gonna have a lot of problems on offense with regard to their quarterback position, no matter how highly rated Dane Crist is.
Well, and with that, I figure we should probably bring in our guest for the night. Dave, you want to introduce him?
I'd be happy to. Joining us tonight is our good friend Matt Hinton from Dr. Saturday. He's been with Yahoo's college football site, Rivals College Football site, for quite some time now. You've probably read all of his pieces before. It's hard to add superlatives to what he's added to the college football, quote-unquote, blogosphere. He is an outstanding writer in his own right. And we are actually quite thrilled to have him on board. Matt, thanks a lot for joining us, man. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be on.
Hey, you finished up your Big Ten preview a little while back, and at the end of it, and especially this past week when you were going through your blog poll top 25, you put Ohio State number one. There are a lot of us out there that say, well, a little surprised by that. Can you give us a little bit more background as to why you picked Ohio State number one overall?
I don't see that it's surprising. To me, it's surprising that Ohio State is not a more popular choice to be number one, because they're the only team in the country, to me, that has, all the – when you have the checklist of what you're looking for in a national champion in the preseason, they're the only team that really has the entire checklist. I mean, they're the only team that doesn't have a really glaring weakness. They've got – veteran quarterback, Terrell Pryor, now started for 2 years. He's just hitting, the prime, the peak of his career now as a junior. He's coming on the best game of his career. They've got the big play guy on offense, Devere Posey. They've got all the role players on offense. They've got a veteran offensive line. They've got great player on the defensive line, Cameron Hayward. They've got a couple senior linebackers backing them up who make all the little plays. They just... the talent level is high. They've had top five recruiting classes over the last few years, which is a little bit higher than it's been when they've played in a championship game in the past. And last year, they had the string of over from 06 to beginning with the championship game loss to Florida through the Fiesta Bowl loss to Texas in 08. They were 0-6 against top 10 teams. Last year, they were at a real low point, I think, at midseason last year. They lost to USC early, when USC was clearly vulnerable. Really, Ohio State, it felt like they gave that game away to USC. They lost to Purdue, which is the worst loss, I think, since Jim Tressel has been there. But after that, they really pulled it together. I mean, they beat Iowa, they hammered Penn State pretty hard, and then they beat Oregon in the Rose Bowl. So they've won three straight games against top 10 teams. I mean, it seemed like they put it together, and it just seems like this is the year that they have everything going for them, that it's together. And the worst thing I can think to say about them personnel-wise is they have two new safeties. Other than that, what I think really holds people back is just the fact they've played so poorly in BCS games in the past. But that was a different set, that's in the past. That was a different set of players. I think that there's good evidence that they've put some of that behind them. I'm not wildly enthusiastic about Ohio State. I just think that they have the fewest negatives of anybody else. I mean, you look at Alabama, they're replacing so many players on defense. I just cannot imagine that team that really did won a lot of close games last year. I just cannot imagine that team running the table again in the SEC with so many new faces. I mean, they needed the best defense in the country to run the table last year. And I don't think that even if they come close to it, I don't think that they're gonna have that kind of consistency again this year. Texas, Florida, Oklahoma, all of them replacing, six, eight draft picks apiece on those teams. So Ohio State is, they're the most veteran team. They've got the kind of elite talent. I think it depends on, whether Terrell Pryor sort of makes that leap into an elite player. Week to week, he's not going to be Vince Young. He's not going to put up ridiculous numbers. That's just not how Ohio State plays, and that's not what Jim Tressel is going to do week in and week out. But I think in big games, if he can kind of start to live up to that hype and really play to his potential, and they let him go a little bit the way they did in the Rose Bowl, yeah, I think Ohio State, to me, looks like the best team. And that, some of that's just on paper. But, you know, I think they have the most going for them and the least going against them.
Now, Matt, you've been covering this for quite a while, and you had just talked about whether somebody like Alabama could run the table. Last year felt like there were, you know, two or three kind of Leviathans at the top of the top 25 that were going to kind of dominate throughout the year, and then there were kind of the underling teams like, you know, Cincinnati and Iowa and TCU and Boise. This year it seems that there are far more questions at the top. Is this one going to be one of those years where kind of all hell is going to break loose and maybe everybody comes in with a loss?
It does look like that. Yeah, last year was just right from the beginning. It was just Florida, Alabama, Texas, you know, right on through. You know, once USC fell off the map and Ohio State early on, I mean, it was obvious. And Oklahoma early on, you know, it was obvious that was the direction. It was going to be Texas against the winner of Alabama, Florida, and that's exactly what it was. There's no drama whatsoever coming down the stretch, which, you know, unlike previous years where there's been a lot of drama. So hopefully this will be a year like 2007, which also didn't have turned out not to have a front-running team, although at the beginning of the year, USC was unanimous number one and really looked like the dominant team. That didn't last very long. So hopefully it'll be that kind of year where, you know, you have teams getting knocked off every week and you have no idea who's going to be there until, you know, literally the last few minutes of the championship Saturday. But you don't know. You never know how it's going to turn out. I do think that it looks like that. This to me looks a lot like 2006, the last time Ohio State ran the table in the regular season. Just there's no one dominant team up there. I mean, and there's not. I mean, some years there are a lot of good looking teams. I mean, 2008 there were probably five or six teams that looked like they deserved to be, or you can make a good argument for them to be number one. Really, I can't make a good argument for anybody to be number one, honestly. I mean, I think Ohio State has the best argument. But, you know, there's no team that just really stands out and looks like they're going to be the dominant team. Everybody is vulnerable. And the only teams that look like they really have a good chance of running the table are Boise State and TCU. And, you know, you can begin insert argument here with those two teams.
there's a reason why they might go undefeated, I guess, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, Ohio State fans and Big Ten fans aren't hoping it ends up like 2006 because, well, frankly, that was kind of embarrassing. But before we get into a little bit more Big Ten talk, there was something that came across the news blotter today that I think, you know, does kind of impact that national championship picture, at least before the games get played. Mark Ingram went down with a knee injury, and he's going to be out at least for the first game. Have you heard anything else? Is this serious? Is this just a routine scope? And frankly, does this even really affect Alabama, who is loaded at tailback?
I don't know how much. I think that it can affect them if it lingers into the season. You know, it's being very downplayed right now. He's only officially ruled out for the San Jose State game. It seems like the general assumption seems to be, although this is not Alabama has not said this, the general assumption seems to be he's probably going to be out for Penn State. And then, you know, maybe back, and then the next week they're at Duke. There's no reason to bring him back for Duke. So, you know, maybe it'll be a month into the season when they play Arkansas, which is one of their bigger games of the year, that he'll be back. If it lingers into the season, if it goes to Arkansas, to Florida, or if it's just a problem all year, maybe it'll affect them. Early on, I think definitely not. Certainly not against San Jose State. I mean, Trent Richardson can run all day. You can name his number against San Jose State. And then I think against Penn State, even if Penn State plays well on defense, I think Penn State just has so many questions. The quarterback situation there looks pretty dire to go up against Alabama. Even a young Alabama defense has to have a pretty big advantage at home against whoever Penn State is going to be putting a quarterback. So I'm not sure that it's going to affect them a lot. It just depends on how long it lasts.
Matt, you kind of left the question open there, and I got to jump through it. How do you read the Penn State quarterback situation? Is it kind of lesser of all evils at this point? And who do you think will be the starter, you know, for the bulk of the season?
I don't know. It doesn't sound like anybody. It doesn't sound like Penn State knows who's going to be the starter. See, they said Joe Turner said they're going to play all three of them against Youngstown State, Newsom, McGloin, and Bolden. So I think they're still waiting to see how the chips fall. I think that it sounds like a reason to worry, just because Newsom seemed like such the obvious heir apparent. I mean, you know, he was with his recruiting hype, and he comes in immediately as the backup quarterback last year as a true freshman. It just seemed like he was going to be the obvious 3-year starter that they build the offense around. And the fact that he can't put away, a former walk-on and a true freshman, I think is really reason to worry. I mean, I guess Newsom would still be the favorite. It sounds like all of them are even right now. But just, you know, and I know that he didn't play very well in the spring game, and neither did McGloin. Really, the way most people are talking now, it sounds like Bolden has been the most impressive guy. You only have sort of vague practice chatter to go on that.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, maybe Bolden would be the smart pick. Newsom seems like the obvious guy, but again, the fact that he hasn't locked it down yet is the biggest worry there. It does sound like a pretty rough situation.
Well, let's stay on quarterbacks too, because I think there's another obvious question on quarterbacks, which is the situation in Michigan. There's been a lot of holding things very close to the vest by Rich Rodriguez as to who is going to start. Do you see this as maybe gamesmanship, or do you see this as he really just doesn't know?
I think it's a similar situation where they plan to play all of them. I mean, they're so different. Robinson and Forcier are so different, and they do so many different things. I mean, we still don't really know if Robinson can complete a pass yet. You know, other than Delaware State, he was terrible. I mean,
he threw a lot of good passes to Penn State, though. I remember that. Specifically,
Yeah, but Robinson has had glowing reviews all year. Going back to the spring, I mean, it's been relentlessly positive for Denard Robinson for months. You know, through the summer workouts now, you know, going into practice, I mean, it seems like everything is pointing to him as being the guy. Whereas Forcier, was just kind of okay and, you know, apparently didn't have such a great summer as far as the workouts go. He kind of got called out by one of his teammates and, apparently, you know, some coaches have said some things off the record, over the course of the summer about Forcier's work ethic. And he never had really the upside that Robinson had to begin with. I mean, it doesn't seem like Tate Forcier is really going to be any better than what you got from him at Notre Dame or against Notre Dame last year. It seems like he's kind of going to be the same guy. I mean, he kind of was fully formed. He's not going to get any taller. His arm's not going to get any stronger. He's not going to get any faster. And he seemed to have a pretty good grasp of the offense already. So Tate Forcier has a very low ceiling compared to Denard Robinson, which could be, you know, Pat White, I guess, would be the ultimate comparison on him. It looks from the outside like Gardner is the guy or is going to be the guy, but it also seems hard to believe that they're not even going to give Forcier a chance after he started every game last year. So I think that it's going to be a situation where they rotate them and just kind of see how it falls. And then apparently Devin Gardner is going to get his shot too. Although it seems very unlikely that a true freshman is going to immediately come in and unseat one of the other two guys, especially when he doesn't really offer a different skill set than Gardner right now. I mean, if you're going to have a running quarterback back there who's going to do the read option, it seems like it's going to be Gardner or Robinson, seems like it's going to be Robinson rather than Gardner.
Now, there are two teams that you talked about in your blog poll, Matt, that sit at opposite polar ends of my heart, and both of which you have a little bit lower than some other people do. I'm talking, of course, about my Iowa Hawkeyes and the hated Nebraska Cornhuskers. Talk for a minute about what you're seeing in those teams and why you've got them kind of in the mid-teens rather than in the top 10 where some other people have ranked them.
Well, Nebraska, I think I had at 11th, which I actually got some heat for that. That seemed to be pretty high, according to my commenters, even though it is lower than where they are in most in most polls, mainly with Nebraska, is because they have no offense. They don't know who their quarterback is going to be. Judging from last year, the quarterback is not going to be very good, and they have no other weapons. I mean, they can kind of eke out a running game a little bit, but they don't have any threats at receiver. They're not. I mean, they're just very, very mediocre at offense, and at best, you know, it seems like they're just going to be an average offensive team. They're still going to have to win games with defense. And when you take Ndamukong Suh off the defense, you know, and also a couple other Big 12 guys, there was Asante and Philip Dillard. So you're using three all Big 12 guys off the defense, and then, you know, one of the most dominant players of the last decade on the defensive line. You really don't know how good that defense will be. I mean, I'm basing a lot of my optimism on Bo Pelini and just the fact that he's had so much success as a coordinator everywhere he's been, and has, I think, pretty obviously turned the program around and has it going in the right direction. And they were very close to a big year last year. If they had anything on offense, I mean, last year would have really been sort of a return to greatness year, but nobody paid any attention until the end of the Big 12 championship when they almost knocked off Texas.
Yeah.
So it's all, you know, it's all just depending on whether they can get anything to go with defense there. And a lot of it also is just the fact that they play in the Big 12 North, which has no other standout teams. I think Missouri may be okay. Otherwise, you know, that's a pretty easy division for Nebraska. Iowa, you know, for me, Iowa just, I don't know. I mean, they seem to regress a little bit on paper last year. It seemed like they had, you know, statistically, you know, they're still very good on defense, and they've consistently been good on defense under Ferentz. On offense, you know, they were pretty weak last year. I mean, they finished toward the bottom of the Big Ten overall, won a lot of close games. You know, I'm very skeptical of teams that win close games, a lot of fourth quarter comebacks. And one of the things I've written about with Ricky Stanzi is that he's dramatically better in the fourth quarter than at any other point in the game. I mean, statistically, you know, it's
staggering. It really is.
Yeah, you can see the huge upward tick in the fourth quarter in Ricky Stanzi's performance, which, you know, is I guess a good thing. You know, I don't think you wouldn't want it to be the other way around. You know, if you're gonna have an inconsistent quarterback, you want him to be at his best at the end, especially if you have a team like Iowa that plays in a lot of tough, close, low-scoring games. But just the number of close games that they had, and some of the teams, you know, struggled against Northern Iowa. Arkansas State was a struggle. Michigan State was a struggle. You know, it seems to be whether they get the ball last, it just seems kind of circumstantial with them. You know, how does the game play out? Do they get the ball last? You know, they just seem like kind of a perpetual 8-4, 9-3 team that can go one or two games in either direction, depending on how the breaks go. And so, I don't think that I have Iowa. I mean, I don't feel like I have Iowa very low. I mean, I think 14th, you know.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's above
that.
Average. I mean, it may not be above average for where people are ranking them this year, but, you know, in general, like the generic Iowa ranking, I think that would be pretty high for them.
Well, you know, I would agree with you. 14 is a pretty reasonable ranking. That is, if you hate America. That's the way it is, Matt. I see how it is. Patriotism, USA number one. It's the only thing we got right now. It's always people put us in the top 10.
Love it or leave it, man.
Exactly. Now, there are three teams at the top of the Big Ten: Wisconsin, Ohio State, and Iowa, by most people's calculations. What weaknesses do you see in those teams, and how do you see the top of the Big Ten shaking out?
Well, Wisconsin looks pretty good on offense. They've got the entire offense back, and they led the conference last year in, I think, total yards and scoring. I think Tolzien looks like kind of an underrated quarterback. Obviously, John Clay is the best running back in the conference, and got a great offensive line there. They're not as good on defense, and they weren't very good in their biggest games. I mean, Ohio State and Iowa both hemmed them up pretty good. The offense didn't really do very much in either one of those games. But I'm generally pretty high on Wisconsin. They missed Penn State in the conference. They don't have a big non-conference game. they have a very good chance of going 10-2, or as they did a couple of years ago, going 11-1. I mean, obviously, I think they're a significant underdog to Ohio State, which has to be the favorite in the conference. And we just discussed Iowa.
Sure.
Minutes ago, I think that just depends on whether they can, you know, Iowa I think can be pretty good if. I'm saying this. I think they could be pretty good if they get a running game going. But they had Sean Green a couple of years ago, and were better last year when they really couldn't run it at all. I think what were they, 10th in the conference in rushing last year after, you know, having the best running back in the nation in 2008, and you know still wound up having a better overall team. So I was very hard to predict. I mean they could go 11-1, or they could go 6-6. I mean, it all just depends on how the breaks fall for them.
Well, we'll do some collective editing and get that 11-1 in there, and we'll ignore the 6-6. But hey,
I will say I haven't mentioned Adrian Claiborne yet, who I think is going to be the best defensive player in the country.
That's all I need to hear.
He was really impressive. I know statistically he was great against Ohio State, and then in the Orange Bowl. I don't know what his stat line was, but he was obviously the MVP of that game and deserved it because he completely dominated Georgia Tech throughout that game. I mean, he's the guy this year who looks like he has the most potential to be an Ndamukong Suh-like player who just lifts the entire defense. I mean, Claiborne really looks like a dominant player.
Well, for my team's sake, we'll certainly hope for that. Thank you again for joining us tonight, Matt. And remind everybody they can catch you on Yahoo at Doc Saturday. And as if they don't already do that, I'm sure they will now. Thanks again, Matt.
All right, guys.
That should do it. All right, hey, thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay, man.
We'll probably have it posted tomorrow morning, so we'll get you a link just in case.
All right, I'm enough.
All right, thanks, Matt.
All right, man. Have a good night.
You too.